You're listening to episode 26 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. And now, I'd like to take a brief moment of your time to ask a favor. I know a lot of podcasters hit you up for cash in the form of donations, and I'm not going to ask that. I do this because I love entertaining you, ladies and gentlemen, and brightening your days. However, it's difficult to promote my material in the sea of other podcasts out there. What I want from you is a single rating. Please just log on to podiobooks.com or your favorite podcatcher and leave me a review. It won't take much to push my tiny podcast to the top. Please, rate The Gearheart so we can help bring it to others out there. If you haven't had a chance yet or you're listening on iTunes or podiobooks.com, you can stop by The Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username The Gearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of The Gearheart. Last time on The Gearheart, Jonathan learned that the Queensmen are more frightening than he could have imagined, but Isabel stepped in to rescue him. Cog had a rescue of her own when Crust helped her fight the special agents sent to track her. Now that the tables have turned, can they escape? Find out on The Gearheart. Jonathan knew, after one look at Isabel, that something was wrong. The bed exploded into roaring timbers. Her robes had burned away, and flames licked across her bare skin up to her hair, which shimmered and trembled in the orange light of her fire. Strange, luminous fissures snaked across her skin like striations in marble, and they grew before Jonathan's eyes to cover each surface of her body. Isabel held her stomach and her posture slumped, as though she feared her guts threatened to pour from her. She placed one hand on her chest as the pipe that brought her magic from the Seeker main house melted away. Nothing flowed out of the pipe. Something was very wrong.
Isabel!
Jonathan coughed, but he wasn't sure what to say next. He only knew that she was doing something crazy. She placed one bare foot upon the tile of the bedroom, then the other foot, causing a little ring of glowing glass to well up around her toes like solar molasses. The Queensman who could fold air took quick aim at her head and popped off a shot with his sidearm. The bullet splattered across her face as molten lead ran down her cheek. Even melted, the projectile should have done some damage, but Jonathan supposed that the intense heat that surrounded her like boiling water must have done something to slow the bullet. Isabel scraped the metal off her face and cupped the molten lead in her hand, watching it roll like quicksilver, and considering its mass. Then she flung it into the gunman's right eye. In the middle of his screeching, the injured Queensman threw out another glyph with surprising speed and precision, and a prism of invisible walls closed around Isabel, lifting her to the ceiling. Suddenly, all of the fire around her form was extinguished as it consumed the oxygen, leaving Isabel pressed into the tight quarters of the spell. The glowing rifts along her naked body continued to smolder underneath her reddening skin, though, as the Queensman directed Isabel's capsule to shrink further. Isabel placed a palm on the wall of her collapsing chamber, and the air immediately surrounding her skin began to effervesce and illuminate the nearby area of the room. Before long, it was as though Isabel's chamber was a brilliant light bulb, and she was the filament. As the air hissed and threatened to escape from the chamber, Jonathan realized he was in extreme danger. But where could he go? Isabel and the Queensman were between Jonathan and the door, and any moment, the containment that the Queensman held was going to collapse outward in a rush of superheated gases. That was when Jonathan did the only sensible thing of which he could think. He gathered all of his might and threw himself against the third story window. The panes of glass shattered out of their frames, but the metal held. As the glass fell away, Jonathan felt all of the air in the room spontaneously change direction to rush out of the new opening and into the cold outside. Jonathan could see the courtyard of the palace below, curious bystanders stopping to see the source of the light pulsing from the infirmary window.
"Hey!" shouted the remaining queensman, noticing Jonathan's attempt to escape.
Jonathan called upon Slade, and his ancestor shot to the front of his mind like a comet. Before Slade could get any further, Jonathan erected a powerful barrier of will, allowing only a trickle of the king's might through, and the young man directed the flow of energy toward his arms. Jonathan's stomach lurched as he felt the onrush of power, but he had to be strong for Isabel. He kept Auden at bay, fighting the spirit while goading him forward into his own hands. Auden Slade's familiar steel gauntlets sprouted from his arms, locking around his hands with a resounding snap. The young man felt tension in his left eye, and he imagined that it might be looking around, independent of his right eye. When he glanced back and met the unoccupied Queensman's gaze, Jonathan knew from the look in the man's horrified eyes that something had happened to his face. The wounded Queensman shouted something to the other man, but Jonathan didn't wait to hear it. He reached out with his ironclad hand and latched onto the metal frame of the window. With a surge of power, he tore it loose from the bricks and hurled it back, underneath the floating form of Isabel, and straight at the two Queensmen. As the iron gate sailed toward the two attackers, one ducked away and the other simply vanished, only to appear directly in front of Jonathan with a pistol pointed at his face. Slade's hands reacted long before the shock of the Queensman's assault wore off. They whipped out and smashed the pistol from the attacker's hand, hurling it against the wall where it discharged into the nearby cinder blocks. Jonathan felt the bones of the man's hand snap as his gauntlet followed through after the strike, but no pained expression crossed the Queensman's face. The man lashed out with a quick sidekick, connecting with Jonathan's ribs and sending the young man tumbling backward out of the recently opened window. Cold air rushed past Jonathan's body as he flailed in mid-fall, trying to get his bearings. The fall seemed inordinately long, and every moment churned the young man's stomach as he waited for the ground to obliterate him. With a sudden spin and random luck, Jonathan found himself facing the stones of the courtyard path as they rushed to meet him. His gauntleted hands crashed into the ground with the force of a car, considerably slowing his fall, but still sending him on to his fractured ribs. Bright pain bolted across his pummeled body, and Jonathan's oxygen fled his lips like a rabbit bounding away from a leashed dog. He tried to breathe in, but the gurgle of blood was the only thing he felt. He pushed his hands underneath him, crawling onto his knees, coughing and gagging on his own blood. It fell from his lips onto the cobblestones below, painting them in strokes of perfect rust, fleeing his body as surely as it was drowning him. Jonathan's head had just started to feel fuzzy as a trick of the light brought the teleporting Queensman's shoes into view in front of the young man. He pleaded with his body to take in just a little more air, but it wasn't listening. And all the while, there was Auden Slade, ready to take the reins. But Jonathan didn't want to hand them over just yet. For one thing, Jonathan wasn't sure when he would get them back, as injured as he was.
"Initiate Andrews," came the voice of the Queensman. "Surrender. I personally intervened on behalf of your chapter, and it would be a shame if you all died before we got some answers."
So, this was the man whom the Seeress tasked with saving the Fumiston chapter from the mercenary group. He wanted to tell the man if he trusted the Seeress enough to do her bidding, he should trust Jonathan. As the young man stared at the Queensman's spats on the gravel, he felt fire pour into his lungs as his airways cleared for a moment. In a monumental show of will, Jonathan forced himself not to cough.
"Didn't you love the Seeress?"
he asked the Queensman, but then succumbed to hacking up blood.
"Of course, but I expect you'd better not talk again. It sounds as though one of your lungs is about to collapse." said the Queensman. Jonathan died to force out the words, "I've only ever done what she wanted," but he couldn't make his body listen. He desperately tried to rebut the Queensman, but the only thing that would come to his lips was his own flowing life. In the moment that all he needed was oxygen, all he wanted was words.
"Just surrender, fool. I think they can still save you."
There were no visions to tell Jonathan what to do. There was no Cirrus. He had no headmaster, no team leader, and no orders. Isabel's life above him was in mortal peril, and he was reasonably sure that he was going to die in just a few more moments without serious medical attention. He was so deep within his enemy's stronghold that he would have to fight all of their best soldiers to escape.
"Give up, Andrews. It'll make it easier at your comrades' trials," said the Queensman. "Think of your friends, boy."
Then another voice entered Jonathan's head.
"Give up, Jonathan,"
came the powerful voice of Auden Slade. He sounded like a caged lion. It was the first time that Slade had ever spoken to him. Jonathan felt his face touch the frigid stones, and then come to rest against them. He inhaled their damp, earthy smell. His skin had grown so tingly, and his mind felt so slow and unresponsive. The Queensman's strong hands wrapped around his shoulders and turned the young man over, and Jonathan found himself looking up at his attacker, a face silhouetted against the high blue sky. Jonathan hadn't taken a breath in longer than he knew, but his lungs didn't ache. He just looked up at the Queensman with unthinking eyes as the Queensman stared back in sympathy.
"Fool," said the Queensman, shaking his head.
"You were never meant for a life of battle," said Slade. "Just let me have this body and go to sleep."
"How can that be true?" asked Jonathan, though his lungs did not have the air to repeat his thought. His lips soundlessly mimicked the sentence. The Queensman caught notice of Jonathan's lips and cocked his head to one side, leaning down to him.
"What is it, lad?"
"Isabel still has strength, so I can still fight," said Jonathan to Slade, his lips moving in muted time.
"Give me your body and go to sleep, young one. I will kill all of them for you,"
growled Slade.
"But Isabel still has strength," said Jonathan, and his hand extended within the confines of his mind toward the waiting claws of Auden Slade.
"Mayhaps I'll save her myself. She would make a fair consort if she could be mended,"
said Slade, firmly taking the line offered by Jonathan. Their two hands joined in a vortex of unbroken power, Slade pulling Jonathan toward a deep, dark abyss. The urges were intense, and Jonathan could sense the peace of the void welling up within him, even as he felt Slade's deep desire to live again in his body. Slade gently but firmly tried to pry Jonathan's spirit loose, to cast away.
"No, if Isabel can fight, then so will I."
Jonathan pulled back with a force unknown to either man, rending magic from the spirit, seizing the offered hand and tearing the strength away from it. The walls above Jonathan that bordered the third-story infirmary washed from their supports like a great wave of flaming stone as Isabel's containment finally collapsed. The roar of the explosion was not like cannon fire. It was not like a tornado. It was a primal sound of destruction, like the shouting of a star, and the shockwave mowed toward the two men. The ancient bricks of the palace came tumbling toward them as Jonathan watched the passing clouds, still wondering if he was dying. In that moment, Jonathan felt raw energy, just like that of the explosion coursing across his skin. His foot swept out and caught the Queensman's knee, flipping him before he could react. A stitch in the light pushed the Queensman from view, out to a safe distance from the explosion, and Jonathan decided to follow quickly before his bed of cobblestones became covered in debris. He brought his feet under himself, and his knees felt like pistons about to fire. Jonathan leapt away from the onrushing cloud of detritus with a speed and agility
he'd never known. There was something flapping in the wind. A cape. His brown hair was gone, replaced by streaming trails of inky plates, like a murder of crows in his wake. Jonathan's chest felt powerful, and a glance informed him that he wore armor. Everything seemed so much slower, so much weaker, as Jonathan's boots met dirt, and he slid to a halt after his terrific leap. The castle where Isabel had made her egress was a gaping maw of crumbling stone and iron the size of a small house. Snapping flames and gouts of plasma burbled through the air inside the building, and all around, seekers emerged like ants, casting glyphs and hurling arcane energies of all kinds. The western side of the courtyard blossomed into a many-colored battlefield as magic overtook reality. But Jonathan didn't see Isabel. He heard her.
"I have become flame,"
seared the voice of Jonathan's beloved friend. It crackled across the surface of the palace and its remaining windows. It echoed through the halls and chambers of the castle. It rocked the earth beneath their feet.
"Jonathan Andrews is leaving. Anyone that touches him will die."
By now, the courtyard flooded with seekers, queensmen, agents, special agents, officiates, and the like. Most of them had weapons drawn. Some of them carried luminous swords or bows hewn from the force of their will. All of them stared at the flaming hole in their headquarters, fearfully awaiting what would soon emerge, and not really paying attention to the Queensman, who squared himself against his opponent. None of them seemed to know who Jonathan Andrews was. Jonathan raised his hand slowly, but he was calm now. His breath was free from the confines of his bloodied lungs, and his pulse was even. He knew that, slung across his back, was a sword so sharp it would pass through any man here. Invested in his arms was the force of a thundering locomotive and the will of 1,000 years of hate. "Did you hear that, Queensman?" asked Jonathan. The Queensman frowned. "Queensman Hadley. And yes, that was quite the proclamation." "There's no good reason for me to kill you, Hadley. Let me go to my friend and calm her down," said Jonathan, preparing to unsheath his sword.
"No. And if you draw your sword, I promise you will end this day upon it," said Hadley, unimpressed by Jonathan's new appearance. "The other seekers will handle your friend."
Jonathan's palm met the pommel of his blade before Hadley's sentence was finished, but Hadley was gone. Jonathan spun to face directly opposite, expecting the Queensman to appear behind him, but he saw only the front gates of the palace, which swarmed with guards. 2 thumping footfalls in the lawn at Jonathan's side were all the warning he got, and Jonathan was forced to release his blade to guard his own neck. "Predictable," came Hadley's voice. The swordsman caught the blade of Hadley's dagger with the flat side of his palm, and the knife dug deep into his hand. Jonathan stifled a shout as the Queensman gave his knife a quick shove and a twist, penetrating muscle and scratching bone. The young man threw a mighty check with his shoulder, plowing into Hadley's torso and shoving him away with the bloody barb. However, in the rush of steel that followed, Jonathan realized his Queensman nemesis now possessed the sword of Auden Slade. Jonathan's attacker had grabbed the blade when he stabbed him. When the young man looked down at his right hand, he saw that it was reduced to useless meat. Jonathan swore upon Hadley's grave in a scream so primal that it was even audible over the inferno at the far end of the courtyard. Many of the seekers suddenly turned, realizing the battle had 2 fronts, their backs now to the flaming hole in the palace. Jonathan looked up to see he now had many, many more opponents. They were all quite intent upon harm.
With the military might of the Seekers bearing down upon him and open war at his doorstep, how will Jonathan survive? Can he and Isabel really make an impact against such massive strength? And can he help her get away? Find out next time on The Gearheart. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Von Schlausen's Fine Demon Ink. For the stylish summoner, You wouldn't send a wedding invitation on a napkin, so why would you invite the hordes of the underworld into our plane of existence with a cheap fountain pen? Von Schlossen's demon ink is made from pure virgin maidens, not old spinsters like some demon inks, harvested from the Swiss Alps and distilled as a product of Austria. Von Schlossen's fine demon ink, only the best keeps evil at your behest. And by Don Giacomo's Fancy Style Bullets. Better bullets for a bigger bite. Got a problem, needs plugging? If you're going to shoot a man, you need to do it fancy style. And no one is fancier than Don Giacomo with his four bullet styles. Burberry, Argyle, Pinstripe, and Houndstooth. Why, your victims will notice your discriminating tastes even as they curse your mother's grave with their dying breath. And also coming soon, Don Giacomo's Gourmet Rounds for the great taste of a lung shot. And now, we return you to the Extraordinary Contraptions with their song, Smote, from the album, Inappropriate on Purpose.